I would describe drafting Joe Alt at seven as hitting for the cycle. You're hitting a home run because it's the thing you need so desperately, but you're also not playing it risky.
Welcome into a bonus Monday edition of the Hot Read Podcast. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I'm joined, as always, by producer JT, who you can follow on social media at JT underscore Runke. JT, how are we doing on a Monday afternoon?
I'm good. If Elon Musk would make his site work, that would be really appreciated. I think that's something that I think all of us can agree on, that, you know, Twitter is an amazing site when it works, but most of the time it does not work. And that's why we had to restart the live stream. But you know what? We're here anyways, because I think from yesterday's episode here on out, I think we'll have a show basically for maybe 11 out of the 12 days until the draft. Like something that.
We're going to have a live show or a post-produced show out. At least one every single day, some days two. The content will be a flowing here on the Hot Read Podcast. Like you alluded to, the population of this live stream, like it's not populating on Twitter as a, unless you click on the link, it's just showing as a link on the tweet. So we ask this every episode. Today of all days is the number one most important day for you to actually help us out on this. If you are one of the couple of people that are here with us live on YouTube or on Twitter, help us by going and sharing this video, because it's not working super well on Twitter. And we want as many people to be in here and be a part of today's episode as possible, because it's about you all, the people, which is unfortunate. But if you just hit retweet on those tweets from me or from JT, from Broadway Sports Media, from the 440 podcast, the 440 Sports Twitter, the Hot Read Podcast Twitter at Hot Read Pod, if you can like and retweet those, it's very, very helpful. And then watch the show today on YouTube, as we always ask. Make sure you're on Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page. Like the video, subscribe to the channel, all of those things to help us out. We need your help today, and we are looking forward to a really enticing topic. So enticing, JT, that it has gotten us out of our regular routine. This is our first not normal day of the draft. The end of the draft season every single year, we start just adding shows in randomly. We start to bend our Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday live stream schedule into whatever we have to do to get all the stuff in. And we decided, you know what, these next two Mondays, we're doing shows. So if you're trying to keep up with all of the content here from the Hot Read Pod on the draft, I'll give you the quick rundown. If you are one of our live stream viewers, then yesterday you caught us on Sunday live with Stoney Keeley doing an offensive line double episode going through the top 10 offensive tackles and interior offensive linemen. If you want to catch that live stream, it's up, still up on YouTube on 440 and on Broadway Sports Media. Today we're live talking about how you all, the people, ranked the top 11 outcomes, really all the outcomes I think that are within the realm of reasonable possibility, how you ranked those heading into the draft, which is just 9 days away now. And we're going to discuss what those rankings, what the results of that survey came up with, which over 200 of you voted. So it's a very thorough grouping, very, very strong sample size, I would say. JT, you and I are going to go through our personal rankings and where we think people got it right, maybe where we disagree a little bit. And then maybe kind of tier those things as to here, if these things happen, it's amazing. This is good. This is fine. This is unacceptable. So we're going to discuss all of those possibilities today in a multiversal episode. Tomorrow on Tuesday, we'll have our regularly scheduled Tuesday live stream. JT, it'll be you and I going through our top 10. Once again, another double episode, top 10 running backs and top 10 safeties tomorrow. On Thursday, we'll be live again, as usual, going through our top 10 edge players and top 10 cornerbacks. So those are all the live streams this week. If you catch the show on YouTube in post or on my Twitter in post or on as a regular traditional podcast on your podcast platform of choice, we had the O-line, the tackles episode drop today. Tomorrow, we'll have this episode dropping on a Tuesday. On Wednesday, we'll have both the interior offensive line and the running back episode drop. On Thursday, the safeties episode will drop. On Friday, the edge episode will drop. And on Saturday, the cornerback episode will drop. So that's the full schedule for the next week. And then looking even further, the week of the draft, we've got a couple of episodes there, but the two biggest ones that I want people to have marked on their calendars, because I'm really looking forward to this. We have the second edition, JT, you and I doing our Titans do and do not draft guide, where we go through every single position at every single round where the Titans are picking. And we write up a big long article about guys that they should and should not be targeting and the reasons why. And we do an episode here on the podcast explaining our thoughts in that article. It's our draft magnum opus. It's the culmination of the past 3 months of work for the two of us, as well as the finality of our pre-draft process, mock draft 2.0, where we give the final guesses as to what is going to happen, not just in the first round, but for the Titans in all seven rounds. So that is our content schedule. Got all of that out of the way. Hope you guys tune into as much of it as you possibly can catch, because we are going to be bringing it for you. Today, however, we are going to focus on just this first round and what could come of the Titans' first round pick at seven. Lots of rumors and hopes out there that they will be trading back. I would say, based on some of the things they've done in their 30 visits and the way that they've talked throughout the offseason, I wouldn't be shocked if in the building they would like to trade back if that opportunity presents itself. And there certainly is good logic behind moving back in this area, this point on the team building timeline that they find themselves on, trying to accumulate as much talent as possible in a really deep draft and get as many dart throws as possible. So, JT, do you want to give your thoughts on, I guess, just this process? And let me go ahead and just lay the groundwork, because I can go ahead and list the 11 things the Titans could do in the first round. And I think this covers all of the bases, right? So on the original tweet I sent out last week, I gave these 11 possible scenarios for the Titans. If they're staying at pick 7 overall, they could go with Joe Alt, Olufashinu, or J.C. Latham at tackle. Those are three options for them to pick a tackle at 7. If they're going receiver, Malik Nabers at 7, Roma Dunze at 7, and then the one defender they think that could theoretically be an option for them at 7 is a Dallas Turner, an edge rusher, at 7. Those are all the options if they stick and pick at the 7th overall pick. And then the 7th option I gave is you trade down for Olufashinu. The 8th option is you trade down for J.C. Latham. So you get those, in most people's boards, tackle 2, tackle 3, tackle 4 types in a trade down scenario. Or maybe the 9th option here, you trade down for Troy Fontenot out of Washington. You trade down for Talisa Fuaga out of Oregon State. You trade down for Amarius Mims out of Georgia, tackles 4, 5, 6, also first round talents. That was option number 9. Number 10 is trading down for Brock Bowers, the top tackle in this class and an offensive weapon that most see as a first round talent. And then finally, number 11, you trade down for a defender of some kind. They could go cornerback, they could go edge, they could go defensive lineman. There are options for them there in the first round. So those were the choices I gave to you all, the people. And I said, I need as many responses on this as possible. I have them numbered 1 through 11. I just want you to respond with a simple numerical order in your opinion, best case to worst case. So 1, 2, 7, 8, got a bunch of those responses. So the replies look like people have lost their minds, but I appreciate so many people participating. I got to 200 replies and stopped tallying them because I didn't have the bandwidth or the hours in the day to sit through and calculate all of these, because I had to go through and like tabulate the averages and all of that. So this is a sample size of 200 votes. My votes in here, JT, your votes in there. And let's go ahead and show what the results of that poll ended up being. They are color-coordinated here for your ease of viewing. They kind of grouped themselves into 4 tiers, JT, but I'll go ahead and go through what the people decided they want. And you see that ranking here on that right-hand side, that is the average number order that it came. So, for example, the number 1 option for folks is Joe Alt at 7th overall. So the average person had that option as number 2.1 on their list. So the top 2 options here, not surprisingly, people loved Joe Alt at 1.7 as their favorite option, and then Malik Nabers at the 7th overall pick as a close second. Then you get into some trade down territory. Third option, according to the people, trading down for Olufashinu. Then they go back to receiver Adunze at 7th overall. Then they go back to trading down for a tackle, J.C. Latham, in a trade down scenario. And then you finally get to non Joe Alt tackles going at the 7th pick. So averaging the 6.3 ish ranking for folks was Olufashinu at pick 7, the second tackle in most folks' minds. Trading down for one of the later tackles in the first round, Fontenot, Fuaga, or Mims, was the 6.4 average option for folks. Trading down for Brock Bowers came in at number, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That was the ninth option for folks. And then you got to the options people downright did not like. J.C. Latham at 7th overall, Dallas Turner at 7th overall, or trading down for a defender coming in at a 9.3 ranking on most people's boards. So if you kind of just look at the color coordination and you kind of just like squint your eyes and look at the colors, because I have them directly correlated to the numbers here, they do kind of group themselves in a 2-4-2-3 pattern, right? The clear and obvious best option for folks. This is downright everyone's favorite outcome, is they either get alter neighbors in the first round, sticking a picking at 7 overall. People love that option. And then there's a handful of things they are quite fine with. They are fine with Fashanu in a trade down. They are fine with Fashanu at pick 7. They are, excuse me. There are three options that they like. They are fine with Fashanu in a trade down or Latham in a trade down. Those two tackles, tackle 2 and 3, I think in the consensus, they like if you can get off of pick 7 and move down. And then the other wide receiver folks are interested in Roma Dunze, also cool with that if they stick at 7 and take a Dunze. I'd imagine in most folks' minds, that's if neighbors is off the board. Then the next tier is, don't love this, but don't hate it either. Like, it's not the worst outcome, but it's certainly not our top five options here. And that is Olufashinu at 7, or taking one of the other tackles in a trade down that is not named Fashanu, Latham, or Alt. That's Fatanu, Fuaga, Mims. One of those three guys in a trade down. People didn't love that, but they didn't hate it. And then finally, the bottom four options all averaged 7.7 or worse on people's rankings. People dislike these in this order from least disliked to most disliked. Brock Bowers trading down, not a fan of that. Really not a fan of getting Latham at 7. Really, really not a fan of Dallas Turner at 7. And really, really, really not a fan of trading down for any other defender. Okay, I know if you're listening on the podcast, that was kind of a confusing way to explain it. But I'll reiterate it in order from best to worst case one last time, according to, again, the people, 200 plus responses. The best case outcome is Joe Alt at 7, then Malik Nabers at 7, then trading down for Olufashinu, then staying at 7 to pick Roma Dunze, trading down for J.C. Latham is next, then picking Fashanu at 7, then trading down for Fatanu, Fuaga, or Mims, then trading down for Brock Bowers, then J.C. Latham at 7, then Dallas Turner at 7, then trading down for a defender. Okay, we've got all that out of the way. Let's start to break it down and not just say things that don't mean a whole lot to people that aren't watching us on YouTube. JT, where do you think the people got it right? Maybe where do you think they got it wrong? What was most surprising to you about the outcome of this poll?
I think the most surprising one for me is the people taking trade down for a defender so poorly there. I think
not a fan.
Not a fan. As we kind of talked about, maybe getting one of these top defenders in the class, which in a class where there is so much good offensive talent on the wide receiver position and the tight end with Brock Bowers and the quarterbacks who are probably going to go half of the first 10 picks there in all likelihood, mm-hmm. getting some more capital to trade down, select one of those top defenders who are still really good in this class. And then maybe in the second round, take one of the tackles that we touted yesterday when we talked to Sony Keeley as a guy who can still have starter level potential. I find that really interesting because I think that's just shows how much fans and others alike really want a tackle to solidify the left side of the line there. Taking anything that isn't someone that Will Levis can throw the ball to or someone that can protect Will Levis is a huge deal to a lot of people.
And honestly, as it should be, I agree with the general feeling from, again, the people here prioritizing the tackle position. If I had to say what I was most surprised by, and I'm partially surprised by it, it's actually I'm less surprised and more disappointed, is that there were only two wide receiver options on this list out of 11 things that they could do, and they came in at number 2 and number 4. I'm not surprised, because as we say every draft cycle, coming off of the, you know, think back to January like 12th or whatever it was, one of the first episodes we did post Titans regular season ending, trying to break down the postmortem of a bad season. And the overwhelming theme is this offensive line is a non-starter. The lack of protection in the passing game in particular makes this offense untenable, right? It does not function and will not function until you address, in particular, the tackle position, and you get some bookends that you can function with. It also impacts the run game and their ability to actually get some push, resetting the line of scrimmage. But in particular, the passing game just does not go. You are so handcuffed. You are so hogtied by this offensive line. That has to be your number one priority. And after being beaten over the head with this crappy offensive line for 3 months, everyone's in agreement. Yes, Easton. Yes, JT. We agree. We must focus on the offensive line. No, it is not the sexiest thing to address in the offseason. But boy, in the season, aren't you glad you have a good offensive line when you have one? And boy, in the season, aren't you miserable when you have a bad offensive line? We recognize that. We've learned the error of our ways. And then you give it 7, 8, maybe 9 seconds on a good day, and we've forgotten that, and we look at the ooh sexy receivers, top end receivers, and this year's draft, boy oh boy, is it the worst, because there really are some awesome options in the top 10 that are super intoxicating, and it'd be awesome to put them on the Tennessee Titans. But man, they still have that issue. They still have that problem, and you must not think with the flesh. You must think with the mind. You must do what you know in your heart to be the most important thing. And yet the people said, you know what? No, it's April. The draft is 2 weeks away. Give us the receivers. Give us the sexy.
I think that, well, I would agree with you. I think the biggest trump card still in the room here.
They've gotten to you, haven't they?
It's not necessarily that. It's not necessarily the people have gotten to me. It's the fact that there's still an ace up the hole, which is the Callahan duo between
Ryan. Is it an ace in the hole or ace up the hole?
It's whatever. It's
well, no, those are very different things, I'd imagine. But I'm not familiar with an ace up the hole. I'm just picturing it. Anyways.
Okay. Anyways, Brian Callahan and Bill Callahan in this system, we know the track record. We've heard from the combine when these things are different, and we also we've heard from them when they're the same. You know, we know how Brian Callahan feels about the wide receiver position and the tackle position when things are either even or not. You also have to deal with Bill Callahan, who I think still very much could sway the way that the Titans look at this draft class, in which there may be a guy in that second round who, you know, isn't the biggest name or the most refined already, but he may be banging the table really, really hard for this guy. And you could look at the Titans saying, man, we could, you know, take one of these guys here at 7, have that replacement for DeAndre Hopkins down the road, and Bill still really believes that he can make a starting left tackle from one of these guys in the second round. And so that's where I started to look personally on my board. I think I fell into that trap a little bit. I had Joel above Rome and Neighbors at 1.7 or the seventh overall pick. However, after that, I think you look at it and it's all tackles. And I think that's the only thing right now. For me, continuing to say, when all things are equal, I think Joe Alt is the better prospect to go with there at 7.
And as Jacob points out, this poll was conducted before the Leroy Watson trade too. So everyone's opinion has changed, as the Titans have, of course, fixed their left tackle problem by simply shipping off a 7th round pick. Right. no, that's of course not something that is actually impactful for this team. They still very much need 2 tackles. And as for the element of having the Bill Callahan ace in your, I wouldn't even say in the hole, but more like in your pocket, you're waiting to play that card. And you know, you're familiar with the unusual depth that this offensive line, this offensive tackle group has. As we talked with Stoney yesterday, just to put into perspective how incredible this tackle class is, we got to, in our top 10 tackles episode, 13 guys ultimately. And all 13 of them have a very, very good chance to be top 100 picks in this draft. 9 of those 13 guys are probably going to be top 50 picks in this draft. And I would say at least 6 of these guys, if not 7 of the tackles in this class, are going to be first round picks. So it's great. And there are going to be starting caliber, you know, in other drafts, first round pick caliber tackles available in this class on day 2. But the adult in me that's trying to be responsible about this recognizes that's kind of the worst case scenario. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's like you're trying to get your kids to like start eating healthier, and there's too much junk food around the house. And you're like, we're gonna start eating healthier as a family. I'm putting my fist down, and you make that decision. And then you get to the summer, and it's like, there's pizza parties and you're going on vacation. It's like, it's hard to enforce that rule when all around us are these temptations. that's kind of what this draft class is, right? That in a normal draft class, I think if you only had, you know, three tackles in this class, people thought, you know, you could plug and play. They're a first round caliber talent. They're all going to be gone in the first 15 picks, and the Titans better get their hands on one of them. I think the landscape would be different in terms of what people wanted. I think folks would recognize that scarcity is a scary thing. And, you know, yes, it's nice to have a receiver, but in general, we're used to teams finding viable receivers in the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round of the draft. We'll address that later. We'll address all these other glaring issues later. This offensive line problem, we put our foot down, we stop it now. We must draft one of these top three guys because there are so many talented ones. We've unfortunately gotten to the point where folks are saying, you know, round two, baby. Don't worry about it. We'll get a guy, which I just think is a little silly. So with that, JT, you can give your thoughts on that, but we can go ahead and dive into our personal rankings of these outcomes and kind of tiering them. But do you in your adult brain, do you recognize what I'm recognizing, or do you just see it differently? You may just see it differently.
No, I recognize it, but it still would be so fun for them to you know, come out of the gate swinging.
So fun. Yes.
With one of the best, if not the best receiving cores in the league. However, I think you have to pick with your brain, not with your heart. And the brain is telling you that none of this will matter if you cannot protect Will Levis. And taking one of those guys who can start from day one, I think is one of the biggest things here. And it's why I think I have a lot of these options here, trading down to select that tackle still in round one above just taking the tackle outright, because I think that's a no-brainer. You know,
right?
When we start talking about why maybe I have trade down for Olufashinu before taking him at 1.7, it's not that I don't like the guy any less.
It's the value proposition.
In this outcome, if I can get more value and still get a guy who I think is so close to Joel by a razor thin margin, I'm gonna take the more value there, right? And so when you look at this class, I think that no matter what, if you take the guy in the first round here to be the left tackle, I think that puts a little bit more ease in the mind of fans and this team. If you wait until the second round, I think then you still have there's more likely outcome that this thing is still not going to work, and we're going to have the same problem in another year.
I'm with Jacob here. I don't even know if this is what he's talking about, but what I'm going to talk about is I think you nailed it with what you said there at the very end. The ease of mind that it gives you if the Titans address one of their tackle positions with a stud at the beginning of the draft, or maybe more importantly, the lack thereof if they don't, the sudden pay. I think it's going to be a very sobering reality for fans if the Titans, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but there's some inherent risk involved if they don't go tackle in the first round, which they may not, as we've illuminated here and as we're going to talk about here in a second when we go through our own personal rankings. What is currently a pie in the sky hypothetical just on paper, don't worry about it. We'll get a guy later. There are options. It's, you know, you're focused on the sexy thing that you're picking instead of a tackle, instead of the ramifications of finding one later, because you know there are theoretically guys later. Once that becomes real, once the Titans stick at seven, they pick Malik Nabers and folks spend 20 minutes celebrating. Oh my God, we got one of the best receivers in this class. Our receiving core is incredible. It's cracked. It's amazing. It's unstoppable. And they start to look around at the rest. You know, we get to pick 15, 16, 17 off the board. Oh, well, look, all six of the top tackles are gone. You know, Titans pick at 38. So it's coming up. Don't worry. But another tackle off the board. And at 27, another tackle off the board. It's going to get tight really fast. And there's going to be some panic that sets in if that becomes a reality, once that reality starts to set in.
The reactions of people on draft day, if the Titans do go with a wide receiver,
it's going to be,
I think it's going to be down. It's going to be fun for
hours.
Me as someone who usually likes to root for chaos, you know, sure, as of right. Last year, waking up your neighbors when Jack Campbell comes off the board at 18, because I love chaos in this draft.
Right.
Seeing tackles continue to fly off the board after the Titans take like a Malik Nabers. And then we get to the back. Like, I think people, it could, for entertainment purpose, get Titans fans to watch the entirety of the first round, because yes, then you're going to start looking at the back half with like a San Francisco who needs an offensive lineman, the Chiefs who need a left tackle or a right tackle. Getting these guys off the board there. I think it makes it a really interesting watch for the entirety of the draft.
And a big narrative of this free agency period for the Titans for us, and it's been a praise of them and the way they've operated, is that, man, they came into this offseason with so many needs, to the point that you looked at their draft and you looked at where they're picking, and as you filled out a mock draft, those needs heavily dictated what you had to do at each pick. You didn't really have the pick of the litter, and we could go receiver here, we could go tackle here, we could go corner. No, it's like they have to get a tackle here, they have to get a receiver here, they have to get a cornerback here. And those biggest glaring flashing red on the dashboard needs they had coming in, they've done a good job to address all but one, their tackle situation, which is the one handicap that they have going into this draft, where it's like, okay, they may have to overdraft a guy just because they need that position that bad in this draft. The rest of the situation, they're going to be able to draft for quality. They're going to draft not for need, but for value. But the tackle position, they got to get that out of the way. And if you push that handcuff decision to the second round, I would argue that 9 times out of 10, they are liable to have to overdraft a guy at 38 to address that tackle position than they would at 1. Because even if Alt is off the board at the 7th round, or at the 7th overall pick in the first round, you're going to have your pick of 2 or 3 guys that are bona fide top 10 caliber tackles in any other draft class. Guys, you know, an Olu Fashanu at 7, nothing to hang your head about. At J.C. Latham at 7, I'm going to argue here in a minute, nothing to hang your head about. These are things that you can do and feel good about. But if you get to 38 and you're taking a Kieran Amagaji at 38 because he's the next best tackle, I really would have loved to have him in the 3rd round other than the 2nd. You know, that kind of deal becomes a reality pretty quickly. I didn't ask you to do this beforehand. I want to talk about it in this way, JT. So I'll go first to give you a second to think about it. We're going to go through our personal rankings 1 through 11, which are both different from each other and different from the consensus, just as a way for us to be able to talk about what the world would look like, what the rest of their draft would look like if and when they made these decisions, but not just ranking them 1 through 11, kind of tiering them into four categories, like the main results came out as, where you've got incredible, good, fine, and hate it, right? Those four things. And I've got in my head what mine looks like. So you think about that, and I'll start with my top tier. I think there are 3 things they can do where I give them an A+. I think that these are fantastic options. And that is, it's all tackle focused. It is trading down for Olu Fashanu, trading down for J.C. Latham, or sticking at 7 and picking Joe Alt. Those 3 things are A+ home run decisions. They all address the tackle need the Titans have. I would argue all 3 can address the left tackle need, because I think that J.C. Latham has the ability to switch to left if they decide that's what they need most. And obviously, Fashanu and Alt, left tackles, bona fide guys that can come in and be comfortable on that left side already. I think those are the top 3 things they can do in that order. Trading down for Fashanu, who's my tackle 2, is the best thing they can do. If I could choose for them, that would be it. Trading down for Latham is my 2nd choice, and then picking Alt at 7 is my 3rd choice. I think that's the best possible outcome. JT, have I vamped long enough to give you time to decide what your top A+, no matter what, options are?
And this is why I love this draft class, because I think out of the 11, there are 5 options that I personally would consider A+s in this draft class. I think Joe Alt at 7 is an A+, because I think when we talk about our do not draft guide later on, I would describe
the first thing on there.
Well, I was
going to draft Joe Alt in a shocking turn of events.
I would describe drafting Joe Alt at 7 as hitting for the cycle. You're hitting a home run because it's the thing you need so desperately, but you're also not playing it risky because you're also hitting a double and, you know, just throw in a single and a triple there. You basically have covered your needs here, and you've done what you need to do there with Joe Alt. I think the 2 other ones that are A+s are taking Rome and Neighbors. I just personally think that those are guys who are game changers. And just looking at the prospect alone, I think taking a guy, I wouldn't fault them for doing that. And then my 4th and 5th options, I really do like Olu Fashanu as well. So trading back for Olu Fashanu or just taking him at 7 if Joe Alt's there, I think that's still just in A+, because I think it addresses the need, and the fall off between Joe Alt and an Olu Fashanu is not that great.
That's fair. So you see those five things as A plus options. The next tier for me, the things that, and really what the ghost I'm going to give up here is that I only see three of these 11 potential outcomes as things that I'm genuinely disappointed about. And even then there's one where there's a world in which I don't hate it. It just depends. And I'll explain that when I get there, but there, I think eight of these things are going to get a thumbs up from me, depending on the circumstances, but likely to get two thumbs up from me on draft night. So the next tier down, if they were to not make one of the top three A plus options, maybe Alt is gone at seven. Maybe they don't, if Alt is gone at seven and they don't have a trade partner to move down to grab Fashion or Latham, then they are going to pick one of these other things. The reality will be something other than those top three options for me. And so the next tier for me, the things that I am fond of, that I like, that I think are very good, are number four, trading down for Fuaga, Fatanu, and Mims. I like all six of these top six tackles so much that if they had to trade down to where they weren't in range for Alt, they weren't in range for Fashanu, they weren't in range for Latham, they have to get one of the bottom three top tier guys. I'm still quite pleased with that. And the guy in particular that I would be quite pleased with, if they moved back to a 15 to a 16 with a trade back scenario and grab Detroit Fontenu, I think folks would be kind of like, the general reaction would be like, okay, they got a tackle, but like, was it like the fourth or fifth best guy? I don't know. I'd be stoked. I think that he is one of the highest floor tackles in this class. We talked about him a lot yesterday. He's my tackle four behind Alt, Fashanu, and Latham out of Washington, steady Eddie as it gets. Very pro ready, that floor, a big part of that is that I would have a lot of confidence in him in particular coming in, more so than even like a JC Latham or maybe even an Ola Fashanu coming in and being like adequate, being mediocre at worst on day one. I think that he has that plug and play ability at really any position on the line, but at tackle in particular on the right side. I would be stoked if they got him and got a bunch of extra capital. And then Fuaga and Mims, man, like, Fuaga, it would make me question a little bit what they were wanting to do in terms of the run pass identity of this team, because he is so much stronger of a run defender or a run blocker than a pass blocker. But perhaps they see that as a guy who we just think we love his nastiness. We think he has all of the requisite skills for us in our offensive line room with Bill Callahan, the offensive line guru. We can have him coach him up. We'll get him up to speed. We'll make him a strong pass protector as well. And then Mims would be interesting for me. They'd need to trade back a significant amount. I wouldn't want to take him at 12 or 13, right? It would also inform for me where they think they are in terms of team building and like viability this season, because he's easily the most project guy of these top six. I heard Dane Brugler recently refer to him. He says he doesn't think he's a project. He just thinks he's inexperienced, but I think he's more inexperienced than he is raw is a good way of explaining an Amarius Mims. The requisite skills are there, and the flashes on tape in the eight games he started, I'm a fan. It's just he's not put it together a lot, and he has very little experience playing live snaps at a high level. So I don't think he's a guy that's going to be awesome for you in year one, maybe not even in year two. Eventually down the road, he becomes potentially the highest. I think he has the highest ceiling out of any of these tackles. And so he could be the best of the bunch 3 years down the road, but you're going to have to wait it out. And I don't know, that's just where I see the Titans timeline changing if they were to go with a Mim. So I'll quit ranting on that. Trading down for one of those tackles is my fourth option. I'm also quite fond of taking Olu Fashanu at seventh overall, because I think he is absolutely worthy of a top 10 pick. I think there's a pretty decent chance Joe Alt is gone by seven. And if he's gone, Fashanu at seven, it will be my choice of tackle there, pretty like without question. He will be the guy that I will want them to target. They have not really shown much intrigue in him this draft cycle so far. Now, that could be sometimes teams publicly don't show any interest in a guy because they don't want to show their hand. The Titans didn't meet with Peter Skoronski last year. They ended up drafting him at 11 overall. Sometimes you don't meet with the guy because you're trying to keep it on the down low that this is the guy that you're looking after. Sometimes you don't meet with them because you just have no questions about the character, no questions about the guy that they're going to be in the locker room. You're solid on them. You don't need to waste a 30 visit on them. Whatever the reason, it would not shock me in the slightest if suddenly everybody's like, whoa, I didn't hear the Titans talk about Olu Fashanu one bit this draft cycle, and he's their pick at seven overall. I would like that pick. And then we get into the, like, I think there are four things besides Joe Alt the Titans could do at seven that I'm fond of. The next three for me are, my sixth option is Malik Nabers at seven. Seven is Roma Dunze at seven. And eight is JC Latham at seven. That constitutes all of the things that I'm okay with. And really, it's just three tiers for me. Things that I love, things that I'm fine with, and then things that I really dislike. Latham is at the bottom for me, not because I dislike Latham. And I've been on the Latham train this entire offseason. I think he is worthy of a top 10 pick. Genuinely, I do. And if Bill Callahan thinks he's the guy at seven, I'm gonna trust Bill until he proves me wrong, right? I'm gonna trust him until he shows otherwise. The reason I have Nabers and Odunze above him, the first two non-tackle options on my list, because one through five for me are all tackle. I am practicing what I preach in terms of they need tackle here. The fact that I think Nabers and Odunze are both top five caliber prospects in any draft class, that's where you get me. Where, yes, Fashanu, he's a guy that the ceiling and the floor constitute for me a guy that you take above those two. But with Latham, I'm just not there. And so with Nabers and Odunze, I think those are a better option at seven if those are the options. But man, Alt, Fashanu, Nabers, Odunze, or Latham, all five of those guys, if they were to stick at seven and pick one of them, I'm not going to be upset with any of those options. Okay, I'm done ranting, JT. What are your thoughts on that, and what did you say?
So back to your first point, I think there are only two options on this list that I would give a thumbs down to. And I think this will be a really interesting conversation when we talk about it. But I think that for the most part, the next tier for me, the one I would be fine with, because I think where this team is right now is, once again, like you said, trading down for one of Fuaga, Fatanu, or Mims, trading down for JC Latham, trading down for Brock Bowers, because I think that would just be fun. I don't think I would still give it a thumbs up, because I think he would be an electric personality as well. Just in Nashville.
Sure.
And then trading down for a defender, because I think that would also tell their hand that they're, hey, there's a guy in the second round that they feel really, really strongly about. And that would tell me more. That would give me a better idea of what they think. You know, if they take the wide receiver, I think that there's that panic. However, if they trade down and still didn't select one of these tackles, that would tell me that they have a lot of confidence in one of these guys in the second round or later. That would give me a little bit more ease of mind and tell me what direction they're going. So those four options, obviously mine aren't as tiered as you, but once again, I just think that this class is so deep in the first round that as a team that really is still looking to 2025 to compete, you really can't go wrong. So that's why I only have two options that I think are really just not the direction they want to go.
It's fascinating that you have Bowers as an option that you're okay with. I said that there are three that I'm not fine with, and one of them I could be persuaded. He's the one that I could be persuaded on, because I need to know what the trade down is for and what else you're getting in the trade, right? Because if the Titans were to theoretically trade down with, let's say, the Vikings spend both of their first round picks to come up to seven. So the Titans are suddenly at 11 and 23. And if they were to go, you know, Bowers and
Mims,
Bowers and Fontenu, if he were to fall, Bowers and, you know, one of the other tackles, suddenly I'm in. Suddenly I'm about that. I really am. It just matters what that trade is for. If the trade looks like, you know, moving from 7 to 10, the Jets want to come up and get their tackle or their wide receiver, the Titans get a third round pick and a future pick, and so they're picking at 10. 38, and then somewhere in the third, and then they pick Bowers with their first round pick, leaving the still gaping hole of tackle and wide receiver and edge and like these something the other more important things. Then I'm not about it. That one's the most context dependent of the options for me.
I would agree with that. I think the context matters, because once again, Brock Bowers in himself is in a league of his own, as in wherever he goes, the context really matters, because it's like a Saquon Barkley situation, right? In which you shouldn't be taking this guy as high as you are, but it's because of the talent that you are. And that's where you're going to have to do more in the rest of the draft to make that pick work, I think. Right. Which leaves me with my two options here, which I would give that I would not be fond of in this scenario. And those two are taking JC Latham at seven and taking Dallas Turner at 7. Starting with J.C. Latham, let's talk about that real quick. I like the prospect.
This is our biggest disagreement here, obviously. Yeah, I'd be
the
okay
one thing. This. The one thing I really disagree with you on is the ability for him to transition to the other side of the line.
Okay,
I think if you're doing that, it's the same principle of taking Peter Skoronski last year. You're playing him for the position that he most likely is going to fit, and I think in the grand scheme of things, J.C. Latham, I think, to reach his full potential, needs to stay on that right side of the line. So that's really why. I'm not knocking him for a prospect.
But don't the Titans need a right tackle too?
They do, but they don't. Currently, they have people. They have people who can kind of play right tackle. They have nobody on the team that can play left tackle. And I think that that is something that, for me, if you're taking the right tackle,
you're Bama hater, dude.
Is notoriously known. That didn't go into any of this, but that is.
I also
known.
Hate Alabama for the record.
However, I think if you take J.C. Latham, that's where you also still have to look at 38 and say, so another tackle? Like, it doesn't make me feel as good going into the rest of the draft if they take J.C. Latham at 7.
Okay. And then your other option you hate?
Dallas Turner. I am not knocking the player. I think he's fine. I don't think
he's both of our rock bottom 11th possible option.
It's a nice edge class. I don't think it's like a edge class last year where there's a de facto number one, like a Will Anderson. I think Dallas Turner is a great player. I think he's going to be really good at next level. Right now, when you look at this team, there are so many more needs than a Dallas Turner. I would even put tight end over edge right now on this team.
Wait, really?
I would, yes.
That's a take. I've never heard that from you. Okay, that's a take. I don't agree, but interesting. Here are the things that I hate, and they're similar to yours, but obviously you have J.C. Latham as something you would hate. I would not hate that. I would be fond of that. I would hate trading down for a defender, and I would hate Turner at 7. I hate them for two very different reasons. I think there's two different reasons why you hate a pick. You can hate a pick for just the value. You think it's an overdraft. You think the guy that they picked is a bum. And then you can hate the pick for the context of who's taking them, when, where, and why. And so for trading down for a defender, I don't hate the idea of it, because they could trade down and get Johnny Newton at 17. I think that's a great place to get Johnny Newton. I think Johnny Newton's an awesome player. In a vacuum, Johnny Newton at 17, whoever does that, I'm thumbs up. I'm about it. Thinking Byron Murphy taking a, you know, trade down, get Quinyon Mitchell at 14, 15. Thumbs up. Like, I'm a fan of a lot of those things. But I'm not a fan of it for the Titans in the first round, because again, it then pushes down the things that you are likely to get hamstrung by in particular on the offensive line. It pushes it down a rung, and it forces you to address bigger needs later on in the draft. And I think that offensively, the Titans need to prioritize those things at the top of this draft, focus on defense with the depth of it. If they were to flip-flop those things, I just don't think this draft lends itself well to that, because I don't think the defense, it's not as strong as the offense at the top. It's also not as deep as the offense, in my opinion, just across the board. And so I'm not crazy about that because of the context of where the Titans are, even though I do like some of these first round defenders. And then Turner at 7, I hate, because I just don't think he's worthy of the 7th overall pick. We've got some very smart friends like Stoney Keeley who disagrees strongly with that. He's just not my cup of tea. I don't know. We'll talk more about.
I would say once again, let's bring back the discussion. Where does the first defender go? Like, Dallas Turner has been popularly mocked as the first defender. I begin to think that there isn't a defender taken in the first 10 picks.
I agree with you if I knew what the Falcons were going to, like, what do you think the Falcons do at 8? That's the only thing for me. I don't know.
The biggest thing is if J.J. McCarthy is there, because then they trade out.
I think if you told me the Falcons trade out of 8, then I agree with you. I don't think a defender is taken in the top 10. But if they stick at 8, man, I don't see, like, their biggest glaring needs to me are cornerback and edge, and I don't see them not taking one of those two. Now, whether, you know, maybe it's Dallas Turner at 8, it could very well be a Quinyon Mitchell or a Terrion Arnold at 8. Like, that wouldn't shock me either. Whatever it ends up being for them, I don't see them, like, they don't really need a tackle. They just paid a bajillion dollars to Kirk Cousins. They've got offensive weapons coming out of every nook and cranny of that franchise. I don't see them as a team that need, but your general point that yes, the defenders getting pushed down the list.
Because then, but also, like, Joe Alt could go at 7, and then with Roma Dunze still on the board, I think they could also trade out and someone
just
could
triple down on weapons or trade out
for like a New York Jets who really want to come up and get him, or
fair,
you know, a Las Vegas Raiders who want to add that or something like that.
That's fair. So yeah, I think that's the general, that's the gist of it. Turner's just not my cup of tea. I was going to go into why, but you know what? That's going to, you're gonna have to wait for our edge, our top 10 edges in the NFL draft. He is one of the best ones, if not the best one in this draft class. You'll see where he is on our big boards on our Thursday episode. But JT, anything to add to this conversation, or do you think we can wrap it up?
I think it was a good conversation. I will say more on my, I do respect Chig, as Derek says, I do, but that was more of a sentiment of reading the tea leaves of what we've heard at press conferences and just talking about the tight end position. I love Chig. As I said in my observations, I'm banging the drum. I like Chig. I don't know how much this regime.
We are a Chiconquo podcast still.
We are.
And forever.
We have to be. However, that's where it more comes from, I think. But
one question in the comments here from Jacob asking, if they somehow fell to 7, which quarterback would the Titans have to take? There isn't. I don't think there is one. I think I
throw it out. I think Drake May. I would take Drake May.
I mean, like, if Caleb here's like the only scenario I see the Titans taking a quarterback is Drake or Caleb falls to 7. They work the lines, and for some
a Bo Callahan situation,
right? Like, for some reason that I can't perceive as an option in reality. Nobody, everybody's just like, we're good. We don't want him. And so they decide we're just going to take him and then have two, like, we'll just see, well, maybe we deal Levis or like, it's not happening. I don't think that there is a guy that is that in this draft class, even though like a Caleb at 7, incredible. But here's the thing in the draft, when something miraculous happens to your team, it's impossible not to think like when you see an awesome magic trick, you're like, that was so cool. That can't possibly be like, what's the trick? Like this, what's the catch? What's the catch? Caleb Williams at 7? Cool. What's the catch? He didn't just happen to fall to 7.
No one went to his birthday party.
What's wrong with
that? Nobody went to his birthday party.
Like when you go to Goodwill and you find like something brand new in the box and it's like, it's 10% of the price it is at stores. And you're like, I've always wanted one of these, but you know, what's wrong with it? Like, is it broken? Is it what there's clearly something wrong with this. It wouldn't be here in perfect condition if there was not something obviously, like, I'm starting to count, like, oh, this game looks awesome. Let me start counting pieces. Let me see the piece log in the instructions, because I think there's something missing here. That's what that would be. So, okay. So those are the top 10, or just top 11 possible options for the Titans as ranked by you all. And the biggest reason why I do this, JT, is so that once the draft comes around in here in 9 days, we get the actual answer to what the Titans do in the first round. We can see what they do. We can get the reaction from the folks. And then I can point to the chart and say, guys, you like
this.
Green
screen. We got to green screen that in. We need a clip of this.
Hey,
just for you going.
Hey, taps the sign. Hello. You guys liked this a couple days ago. You were a fan of that. And now you're not suddenly like, you know, you guys, it was your aggregate fourth total option to get Aroma Dunze at 7. And now you guys are pissed about it because why exactly? So that's the, that's very gif-able. We'll have to cut that later, but that's the main point of this. So I'm looking forward to seeing where on this list the Titans end up going and what the folks react to, reaction to it is going to be. Anything else we want to touch on today before we get out of here? The Titans, they had another 30 visit today, which we can briefly touch on. Terrion Arnold, cornerback out of Alabama, was with the Titans today, as reported, I believe, by Ian Rappaport. That now checks off both of the standout cornerbacks from Alabama having visited with the Titans as a part of their 30 visits. So Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold both in the building for the Titans at some point this offseason. Is that them saying that they, like, there are three options? Either they are interested in one of these guys, potentially in the first round, and they're just covering their first round bases, doing their due diligence. It could be that these are guys they like in a trade down scenario, and they are signaling, hey, you know, we're going to look at a lot of these guys in the mid first round because we'd love to trade down, and then we'll have options there. Let's find out what these guys are and who we like in the teens and the 20s. Or it's, you know, these guys are, you know, mocked first round picks. I'd imagine neither Kool-Aid McKinstry nor Terrion Arnold are available for the Titans at 38. There's a chance one of them falls for whatever reason, because it is such a strong top of the draft class and somebody really talented is going to be there at 38. And so they're just doing their due diligence there. JT, what is this kind of move pre-draft telegraph to you?
It telegraphs to me that we're 9 days away from the draft. things are, you're starting to kind of wrap up your drafts here. And if you still have top 30 spots, might as well check off your boxes, right?
Just burn them.
Just might as well be prepared for any and all outcomes, you know, because once again, it is so unpredictable. No one knows what's going to happen. The next 9 to 11 days are going to be absolutely insane. So I think if the more prepared you can be, the better. And that's what they're doing with some of these defensive prospects. And I think that that is a smart thing to do. Also, you know, like I said, why not? You know, if you have the top 30, might as well use them.
I largely agree. I think that it is mostly a box checking exercise, but there is an element of it to me when you look at the total top 30 list and the guys that they've seen that are first round caliber guys. It's been a lot of guys that are likely to be available in the teens and in the 20s. And I think there is something to, they are trying to be prepared for the scenario in which they get to move back to 14 or 18 or 22 in a trade back scenario, and then have to address their draft from a very different, completely different at the last minute vantage point. So as Jacob says here, let's just manifest Kool-Aid at 38. Now I'd be about it. I'd be for it. And you want to talk about cracked, the Titans cornerback room would be cracked if that were to happen. One last thing in the comments, Daniel Frazier saying they would sprint to the podium to draft Caleb Williams. No, my friend, they would sprint to the phones to sell the Caleb Williams pick. That's what they would do. They would get a haul for it. So yeah, there's that. Okay. That's our show today. I think we're done here. JT, thanks for going through this with me. All of you that voted on this, thank you for being a part of my survey every year. Can't wait for next year to be 300 and we have to spend 4 hours tabulating all the results. Until tomorrow, when you and I will be back here at 4, somewhere in the 4 o'clock hour, somewhere in there, Central Standard Time, talking about the top 10 running backs and top 10 safeties in the 2024 NFL draft class. And then Thursday will be edge and cornerback. If you've missed episodes,
also join our live stream when we do live streams. We're doing live streams for
the draft. The draft Thursday night and Friday night. We'll be live the entire draft on YouTube, on Twitter, wherever you find the show now. Yeah, it's going to be a good time. We'll be sipping and enjoying and going crazy about things that happen that we're not expecting and breaking down the Titans picks in real time. And it's always a good, it's one of my favorite 2 days of the year, really. It's a good time. So join us for those on Thursday and Friday. If you want to get caught up on this draft class as much as possible, we've already got our top 10 linebackers, our top 10 defensive linemen, our top 10 tackles, our top 10 interior offensive linemen, our top 10, what else? So, anything else? Is that all of them?
Tight ends
are out there. Yeah, we've already got half of the positions out. The other half coming this week. So check out all the content. We're really doing our best to crank it out for you guys here at the end. So we appreciate you guys listening in. All right, that's going to do it for us. Until tomorrow, for producer JT, I'm your host, Houston Freeze. It's been the Hot Read Podcast. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.